Hello, hello. Welcome, my AOWs. I am so grateful that you have clicked in for this episode today. We are doing the much anticipated and long awaited part two with Dr. Corinne Menn, and we are talking menopause and HRT after a breast cancer diagnosis. This is a crucial episode. Every time I do an episode like this, it really expands people's minds. And this is crucial both for breast cancer survivors, obviously, but also for non-breast cancer survivors in the safety of hormone replacement therapy. If you know a friend who's a breast cancer survivor, you should definitely send this their way. But you are going to be blown away listening to the most recent data and research on the associations between hormone therapy and breast health. Dr. Corinne Menn is a great friend of mine. I am so excited to have her on for this show for a second time. So without further ado, roll the tape.
Hi, and welcome to Health by Heather Hirsch, a podcast dedicated to uncovering many of the women's health issues many of us are wondering about, but few of us are talking about. My mission is to expose the current gaps in knowledge and care on all things women's health. Enjoy.
If you love the show and you're dying to work with me, there is a couple of different ways that you can do so. First, I have an incredible menopause course. It's called the Reclaiming Menopause Masterclass, and don't be fooled, it also is for women in perimenopause. In this course, I teach you how to thrive. It's my signature method to help you figure out what HRT regimen is best and right for you and how to make adjustments and then how to get this from your own doctor. Now, I also see patients in my private telemedicine clinic. I have a license in several states and I'm always working on more. You can go to my website, heatherhirschmd.com, to find out if you want to take the course and join our incredible Facebook group with monthly lives or work with me one-on-one. Now, I hope I get the chance to work with you. And thank you so much for listening to the show. So we're here for part two, and truth be told, neither of us can exactly remember where we left off on part one because it was over a month ago, but we know that we remember talking specifically about early menopause, premature menopause, and women with high-risk genetic mutations. But today we're going to focus specifically on breast cancer survivorships because Corinne has a particular interest in this, and if you didn't listen to part one, background in this. So I'm going to hand this back over to you since it's been a little bit since part one of this podcast. Reintroduce yourself to all of my listeners, reorient all of them. Tell me very quickly about your story.
Sure. So I'm Dr. Corinne Menn, OBGYN and a menopause specialist and a long-term breast cancer survivor. So the short version of the story is in 2001, when I was 28, I was a second year OBGYN resident. No family history, no particular reason to be concerned about breast cancer. My mom suddenly died of stage four ovarian cancer. It's a terrible story. And it was a shocking diagnosis. And 6 weeks after her passing, I was diagnosed with stage 2A estrogen receptor positive breast cancer. I had felt a lump a few months earlier, kind of had ignored it because my fellow physicians in my OBGYN program were like, oh, it's just a fibroma.
Fine.
You're too young. Yeah, you're too young for breast cancer.
Slept on your pillow strange.
So I got diagnosed. It was obviously a devastating diagnosis for a newly married, young OBGYN resident at 28. Subsequent to treatment, I went through menopause three times. The first time temporarily from the chemotherapy, then once chemotherapy ended, periods came back, ovaries recovered, and then had ovarian suppression with Lupron and was put on tamoxifen. So then had a chemical temporary menopause. Did tamoxifen for a couple of years, and then I, with the support of my oncologist, with shared decision making.
That's key.
I'm alluding to something that we're going to talk to in about a minute, but with shared decision making and a review of the available data back in 2001 and two at the time, they said, okay, you can take a pause from your adjuvant endocrine therapy and attempt pregnancy. And so I was very lucky that I got pregnant that, you know, after cancer easily. And I now have a 19-year-old daughter. So I had some time off and my menstrual cycles returned. I obviously got pregnant and I actually felt great. Right. Mm-hmm. But then after it delivered, they decided like, well, it's time to go back on your tamoxifen. They wanted me to complete 10 years of some type of adjuvant endocrine therapy. And that time I said, well, I'm not doing the loop run again because it was really, really, really hard. I want ovarian suppression and I knew the data that there wasn't much difference, frankly. And so I did just tamoxifen for a little bit and I felt okay. I actually managed that pretty well. But then made the decision to have ovaries removed because of my mom's ovarian cancer and had then experienced menopause for the final third time, which was that surgical menopause. I was fully unprepared for what ensued, which is a lot of what we talked about in the last episode. So people can go back and listen to that. Kind of just, you know, muddled on for the next decade, finishing up the tamoxifen, being, you know, early, you know, premature menopause in my 30s, trying to just be a mom and a doctor, wound up adopting our second child so that I could stay on my tamoxifen, obviously, didn't have any ovaries. And so fast forward, after getting really deep into the menopause world and caring for more and more patients in menopause and really doing lots of self-education for the Menopause Society and other places, I really came to realize I had a wake-up call, like, all right, I was early stage breast cancer. I'm no evidence of disease. I'm doing really, really well. Mm-hmm. I have, luckily as a doctor, I have a lot of access to the information and I got lucky enough to have access to the best experts and was able to talk to them directly and really go through the data. And it all kind of coincided with this big movement of menopause talk for the average woman, right? Mm-hmm. But I tell you, like, the breast cancer survivors feel a little bit left out of this conversation that's all over social media about HRT. It's great. And we should really, like, talk about it. Women have been misled on menopause. And so the breasties, we're out here being like, well, hey what about us? What about us? Because we are often are facing not just natural menopause, although some breast cancer survivors, you know, do not have early menopause and then, you know, they're allowed to, you know, have their menstrual cycles carry on and then they reach natural menopause and their doctor's like, no, not for you because you've got this distant history of menopause. Others are plunged into menopause because of treatment. And what we basically, you and I both know, is that they're kind of left in the lurch, right?
Yeah. That is really true. And I do think that this is a great time to open this conversation up to what does hormone therapy mean? What are the roles for it if you've had a history of breast cancer? And, you know, breast cancer is a pretty broad thing. It could be anything from, a lot of people will consider ductal carcinoma in situ, stage zero non-cancer. Some think it is cancer. Some doctors call it cancer. There's even pre-cancer, atypical ductal hyperplasia, which is not cancer, but you've got some funky cells, right? Then you've got stage one and stage two, and you've got no metastases, both sides. There's just so many things that can encompass that. And the safety of hormone therapy can really depend on a lot of things for someone who has had breast cancer. So why don't we get into that? You know, I know that's a big question, and I certainly don't mean let's just break down each one and, you know, what is recommended here, but start with some of the big, pulling apart some of the big, you know, concepts here that, you know, listeners can start to maybe try to see what bucket they might fall into.
Yeah, well, I think it's really important that you brought up this idea of, you know, breast cancer is, I tell patients, is as unique as your thumbprint, right? Like, everybody's breast cancer is unique and different. And it's something I've had to learn along the way because it's scary as a survivor because you compare yourself to other survivor stories and other stories of women who, you know, we lost to breast cancer and you think, well, gosh, is it going to be me? Is that me? And we all have a different story. Our cancers are not only unique in that the stage or the size, but also lymph node positives, estrogen receptors, progesterone receptors, HER2 new overexpression or not. And then there's a whole other host of genetic factors. You know, we have something called an oncotype where, you know, it looks at your particular tumor and your risks of whether it will come back or not, right? And then you look at what type of treatment you got, what age you were. I mean, there's a huge thing. So I think it's really unscientific, unmedical, and really just not accurate to just put a blanket statement that all breast cancer survivors, for one, should be treated exactly the same. Just like anything in life, someone with mild hypertension to someone who needs quadruple bypass, not all heart disease is the same and not all breast cancer is the same, right? So I think from that very simple starting point, you know, one size fits all blanket statements on anything is not accurate. And it's just,
it's harmful. Let's call it harmful. It's harmful because it's putting people in categories that, or leaving them out of rooms or leaving them out of spaces that, again, by blanket statementing, it's not accurate, but it's also harmful, I think.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that's the most basic thing is your breast cancer is unique and individual. So you need to be able to, and your menopause is unique, right? Some of us have surgical, some of it is at natural age of menopause. Some women are, you know, really premature. Like I was really young, right? We all have different symptoms and we all have different ways that that menopause has affected our day-to-day quality of life, as well as our health risks, right? And so that's really individual, just like it's an individual with a woman with menopause who doesn't have breast cancer. Like the, you know, within the breast cancer community, there's all those different things. And to also understand that we have a lot of, the treatments for breast cancer are particularly, they like raise menopause to a new level. So it's not just that you're menopausal with breast cancer, but you might be menopausal with breast cancer on an aromatase inhibitor that takes your estrogen level in a normal menopausal woman's range, which is not zero. A normal menopausal woman doesn't have zero estrogen, right? She has very low amounts. It makes it even lower, right? So we have to think of that and what that does to a woman, right? So I think all of those nuances, really, there is no room for it in an oncologist's office and in a GYN's office who doesn't even know how to treat, let's face it, most OBGYNs
breast cancer.
They don't know how to deal with breast cancer. They don't know how to deal with a general menopausal woman. Like a straightforward one. So the minute they see the word breast cancer, eyes glaze over, fear comes up. Fear of medical malpractice and getting sued if they do anything wrong. I mean, this is the society.
These are the medical truths.
Yeah. Exactly. And so I don't blame any oncologist or GYN for being scared or resistant or literally just not having the time because of the way the medical system is. But like, as we were saying before the show, like there's over 6 million breast cancer survivors in the world. The army
is
growing and we're diagnosing people at an earlier age. An earlier stage, better prognosis, we've got better treatments, they're living far longer. So are we going to just keep on, you know, adding to this army, these many chemically and often surgically, let's face it, castrated women, and just saying like, get on with it. Here's a little vaginal moisturizer, exercise,
you should be so grateful.
Work on your sleep habits. You know, it's just not acceptable.
One of the things that, you know, is really memorable when I did a podcast with Avram Blooming, and if you're listening to this and you don't know Avram Blooming, you definitely should. He's the author, co-author of Estrogen Matters, and very, very prominent in this menopause world discussing HRT and breast cancer and HRT after breast cancer. But, you know, he said, he was one of the first ones to say, like, as an oncologist 2-3 decades ago, I used to put people in the menopause all the time and never gave it a thought, never gave menopause a thought. It just wasn't a thought. And it really, it's vital to this part of the story that menopause historically was never really a thought, even for women without breast cancer. Yeah. And now this is still where it's kind of left, is sort of in the breast cancer survivorship we're talking about. And it's not okay. That's a simplistic way to say it, but I do think that we still live in a world where a lot of oncologists do not think about the fact that menopause is an independent risk factor for all these other chronic health conditions. And all they can think about is the breast cancer, even though death rates from breast cancer are really, really low. And so that's part of this narrative that we need to like change and that we've been working on changing for the public without breast cancer, you know, but then it adds an extra layer of frustration and anger for the breasties because, again, they really are feeling like they're just completely being shut out of the conversation.
Yeah, and they have no place to go to. And what I think is an interesting counterpoint is, so the Menopause Society, ACOG, has very, very clear guidelines on how we manage premature ovarian insufficiency or premature surgical menopause, right? Very, very, very clear. You and I both know, and we talked about them. And the reason why there's very clear guidelines that they need full hormone replacement therapy, at least till the age of natural menopause, is because they're all-cause mortality risk, their risk of cardiovascular disease, dementia, stroke, depression, osteoporosis, sexual dysfunction. I mean, the list goes on.
On and on.
It is so significant that it is considered really medical malpractice for you not to replace their estrogen. So exactly. Those are all serious risks. I mean, the nurses' health study and the Mayo cohort study, the numbers were unbelievable. 98% higher risk of cardiovascular disease. I mean, these are big, big numbers, right? And so why is that completely not discussed? It is not even of a concern.
Factored in.
When we're looking at a patient, we have to balance the risk of breast cancer returning versus the risks of overtreatment of, you know, with very severe, you know, options that are causing 10 years of ovarian suppression. And then even after they finish their treatment, they've been a good girl, right? They've done their 5 years or their 10 years of time in adjuvant endocrine therapy world. And then they're like, okay, I'm done with treatment. What's next? They're like, nothing. You have nothing. And what is offered, you know, we have, and I counsel patients on this all the time. Yes, we have non-hormonal medications to help with vasomotor symptoms, hot flashes and night sweats. We have lifestyle that will help any, you know, obviously women in menopause. And those are all wonderful things. And I think breast cancer survivors do need to double down, unfortunately, on all of those things. Not unfortunately, it's good. You've got a better excuse. And yes, we have local vaginal hormone options just to deal with that. But we are missing a huge piece of the puzzle. Those things are partial answers. But I think we're intelligent enough as survivors to be able to sit down and be like, what does the data show, Dr. Men? Dr. Hirsch, what does it show on if we give low dose FDA approved hormone therapy,
estrogen patch,
properly selected, individualized option, you know, you pick the patient, well counseled with the understanding that there is actually some data out there. It's not perfect data, but there's some data. And to basically say, no, you have breast cancer, we can't even talk about it. It's a non-starter. You're not going to even have that discussion in my office. That is what patients are told. They call the office. Can I speak to my doctor? I want to talk. No, we don't talk about that here. No, it's off the table. I'm sorry.
The amount of times I've heard, I don't believe in that, which is wild. It's almost like it's a religion. Doctors will literally say, I don't believe in that. It's not a thing that you're supposed to believe in. It's supposed to be rooted in science. But when it comes to estrogen and women and anything with breast, there is an overly emotional, paternalistic, protective feeling. And when we talk about do no harm, you could always argue that in the name of do no harm, we have done a shit fuck ton of harm.
Yeah, it's really, really true. I mean, so yeah, I see
it all the time.
I run the Young Survival Coalition, which I'm really, you know, a part of, and I run their healthcare provider survival group. So it's a monthly online support group where it's only healthcare providers. So fellow physicians, nurses, you know, physical therapists, psychologists, anybody who touches the healthcare world who has been a young breast cancer survivor. So this is a knowledgeable group of people who have access to information. And I am just so shocked and saddened. And I'm just, you have no idea this very kind of educated, really engaged breast cancer survivor subgroup of healthcare providers have no access to any knowledge about sexual health, hormonal health, what menopause means. And when they tell me their stories and they say, well, my doctor, Dr. Mann, never told me, they said, do you have any vaginal dryness? And I didn't really, because I can't have sex with my husband because it feels like knives inside. But they didn't ask me that. They just asked me, do I have dryness? And so or are you sexually active? And she just answered no. Because she's like, they don't want to hear it. And are you having hot flashes? Some, yes. Oh, well, you can use, you know, they give some non-hormonals, but she's like, nobody asks me, do my joints hurt so bad that I can no longer exercise? I can't do the workouts I used to do anymore. I have horrible sleep. I've gained 30 pounds. My cholesterol's through the roof. All of these things are happening. My emotional health has really suffered. I've got a grandmother with osteoporosis, and now I've got osteopenia, and I'm only 38, or I have early osteoporosis. You know, not, they're just like, you know, and what I see is when patients ask to kind of cut down and go from like an aromatase inhibitor to something less, you know, to maybe just tamoxifen or to take a break, you know, they're basically said, well, if you're not going to listen to me, like you have to find somebody new, or they basically are fired as patients. I'm telling you, it's happening across the country. Or they're told, like, what do you want to get metastatic disease and die? How are you going to feel if it ever comes back and you made this decision? And she's just like, well, I don't know. I can't live like this anymore.
Yeah.
Many people feel guilty telling their oncologist that it's not going well. You know?
Because they don't want, either to.
And I'll just be like, what's still well with it? I'm like, really?
Really? Because they don't want to tell you. They come to my office. You want to know what they really say? I everything is confidential. But
so I think it's important to at least have a conversation and be like, how are you really doing? Like, just say, how are you really doing? And have a little inventory of symptoms that, like, you and I would ask in our private practice, right? Tell me about all of your menopausal symptoms. We have all the categories we'll talk about. I feel like that has to happen for breast cancer survivors, not just when they're ongoing treatment, but when they're done with whatever treatments they need, to be like, okay, what are we doing for you now? Because we cured your cancer, but we don't want to ruin the rest of your life.
Your life, which we've been doing for decades. And it's and hopefully, maybe, but slowly but surely, if this whole menopause movement is moving, it might get into this corner too eventually. But let's talk about this. I mean, let's get down to the nitty gritty. I prescribe HRT to breast cancer patients. And it is because, again, we're looking at the individual person. We're looking at, did you have surgery? Is it removed? Have you done your things? How healthy are you? How bad are these symptoms? And, you know, another thing that I do with actually a lot of my patients, because they've thought about this, like, what would you do if it comes back? They've already thought about that. That thought is
it every single day. It's always in our minds. Have you thought about it?
Yes.
I think about it every freaking day. It's been 23 years. I will never not think about it.
Right. And it's sort of a weird question, but, you know, they're like, and I have a plan. I'm going to take this breast off. I'm going to do this. And so it's interesting and it's weird, but, you know, it is one of those situations where if we just do everything to avoid something happening that could happen, that is inhibiting your ability to thrive and function and be healthy, what are we really doing?
Well, exactly. And then the other thing is, I think that, listen, if you're going to counsel a patient about this, if you're an oncologist or an OBGYN, and you are going to make an opinion and tell them something, that opinion really needs to be held up by facts. And if you don't know the answer, it's much better to be like, you know what? I don't know the best answer, but I'm going to read about it. And it's unexcusable to not be able to know it, because if that's what you're doing, if you're taking care of breast cancer survivors, you better damn well know what the literature says about HRT after breast cancer, because it's not really hard to look up, right? Like, you know, so let's talk about what Avram Blooming published in the Cancer Journal, May, June issue of 2022. He was the guest editor, and he invited other leading doctors to write a bunch of other really important review articles on aspects of breast cancer. But the one that we should talk about is the article called Hormone Replacement Therapy After Breast Cancer, It Is Time. And it's a really elegant review article where, in a just a really straightforward manner, he said, what does the literature actually
say?
And yeah. And so he looked at 25 studies that were published in peer-reviewed journals between 1980 and 2013, and then an additional 20 reviews of those studies published between 1994 and 2021. And what's really lovely is that he's got two charts. And so this is, I hand this to patients and I ask them to print it out, bring it to their OBGYN or to their oncologist. The first is the summary of the 25 studies of breast cancer. And let's just say, this is not, these 25 studies, none of them are perfect data. There is no perfect science out there. Some of them are retrospective observational studies. Some of them are prospective randomized. Some are retrospective cohorts. So these are different types of studies, right? And none of them are perfect. We don't have perfect data, but we have 25 studies, and all but one of them shows either reduced recurrence, reduced mortality, no recurrence, no difference. So, and it's all clearly outlined. Mm-hmm. There's one, the HABITS trial, which we can get into, that was being done at the same time as another study called the Stockholm trial. And the HABITS trial did show an increased risk of a local recurrence in the same breast or a new tumor in the other breast. And they stopped the study after, I think, 4 years, but they did do a follow-up at, I believe, 8 years. And at the 4-year mark and the 8-year mark, there was never any difference in distant spread, no distant recurrence, no metastatic disease, and no difference in death of breast
cancer. Mortality is what we actually are doing all of this hoopla for, yeah. Right? Mortality.
So basically, we have 25 studies. One of them shows what I just said, and 24 show the opposite. Including the Stockholm trial that was being done with a very similar population at a very similar time. And it showed totally the opposite results, basically no problems. And then it goes on to then, you know, because there's always review articles that rehash the data. So there was 20 quality review articles where they reviewed a combination, each one of them differently, of those 25 studies. And in that, I mean, it's the same thing, reduced mortality, reduced recurrence, or no difference. Reduced recurrence, reduced mortality, no difference. No difference except for the one HABITS trial. And the last thing I will say on all of that is, and there's more details in this article, is that the HABITS trial did not require a screening mammogram to enter the study. And all of the new recurrence or contralateral breast cancer was found in the first 2 years. So many people feel that that's a real problem.
Right, because we don't know what the real baseline was there, right? Yes. Exactly.
So to say that there's no data is misleading and wrong.
And
I will tell patients, this is not perfect data. Some of these studies are old. We don't know. Many of them, you know, we didn't differentiate between HER2.
Formulations. You know,
there's all these different things. But there is some data there. And you know, the other interesting point I'd like to point out is in the Women's Health Initiative that we talk constantly about, women who were diagnosed with breast cancer, who were on hormone therapy, when compared to women who were diagnosed with breast cancer who were taking the placebo, had a lower stage, a better prognosis, and less likely to actually dying of that breast cancer. So that's a very curious fact, right? Now, no one knows the relationship between estrogen and breast cancer, recurrence, and all these are very complex ideas. But this idea that breast cancer can only possibly recur because of being stimulated by estrogen.
A low dose estrogen patch.
It's just wrong. We don't actually know. You speak to the leading oncologist. Nobody really knows why does some cancer spread? And why does some cancer lie dormant for 10 years and then recur at a later time? In 99.9% of those breast cancers, those women are long menopausal. Their breast cancer is recurring. And it happens. And sadly, we do lose women every year. We have to take breast cancer deaths seriously. And I will never belittle that. I've lost best friends from my Young Survival Coalition community. I held one of them as she died right after delivering her baby of metastatic breast cancer. So I am not immune to the gravity of this, but I'm also, I have to be a person of reason and think about like the bigger picture. And so, you know, I counsel patients that here's the data we have. And like you said, how are your symptoms? You know, let's talk about your specific diagnosis. Let's talk about your goals and let's divide things up from sexual health concerns that we can maybe address with local safe vaginal DHEA or vaginal estrogen. And then let's talk about your systemic symptoms of chronic disease risk, as well as just like day-to-day quality of life things. And then I think that you can take those two buckets and come up with plans for both of them, knowing that like we all talk about, it's a toolkit, right? So lots of things, but I do not believe that HRT needs to be completely ruled out.
No. And, you know, I think that we do a huge disservice and we patronize and we paternalize women by not letting them choose. They can choose. The number of patients I have had that have told me they would rather be in the grave than live the way they are, I hear that all the time. Now, that's obviously because they're coming to me for that very reason. They've been searching and searching and searching. And so it's not that that happens to every single person or survivor. But the amount of times I have to hear that, it keeps me up at night. It keeps me angry about how women have been treated and are still treated lesser than, because they're not allowed to make a decision, even if they've already mapped out what would happen or worst case scenario, even though we know the worst case scenario is you'd find it and get treated again, which not that that's fun, but that probably someone is surveying you pretty closely. And they still aren't given a choice. That's not fair. That is saying that we are the gatekeepers. We, only we know. Only we can do no harm. Only we decide what is harmful. And this is why estrogen and breast cancer are two very emotional things. And people, clinicians, lose all sense of logic for lots of reasons, like you already said, miseducation or not enough education. But then you add on top of that layer, the emotional aspect of it, the fears, the unknowns, the fact that this has been put into our heads as, you know, the worst case scenario for women. It helps at least to explain all the feelings that we're feeling as we're sitting together talking about all this and all the feelings that people are probably feeling listening to it.
So yeah, it's very emotional. And I think, one of the points that you were kind of talking about, or maybe earlier we were saying the misogyny in women's health, right? There's so much misogyny and paternalistic viewpoints. And what I find super fascinating is this idea that the oncology community and the medical community at large has been really, thank goodness, passionate about supporting breast cancer survivors' choices with pregnancy, right? So at the San Antonio Breast Cancer Conference last year, big news, the positive trial was released and it followed women. They were randomized and chosen to either, you know, stay on their adjuvant endocrine therapy or take a pause and get pregnant. They were allowed to take up to 2 years, even use fertility treatments, get pregnant.
I love how you use the word allowed.
Yeah, quote unquote allowed. Yeah. And then they looked and so they released the results. And this was the data that was already in the literature 23 years ago when I was first diagnosed, because I was lucky to have oncologists who believed in shared decision-making. And they said, listen, Corinne, this is what the data we have from the last couple of decades. It seems that pregnancy is probably not a bad thing. You could probably do it, but let's just get you through this first like year or two of tamoxifen and we'll talk. And so then I did that. Well, now it's been formalized, right? And thank God, I'm so happy. I'm not criticizing that. I'm so glad that more breast cancer survivors have an option to get pregnancy, have pregnant. But let's just talk about it. We're saying, let's let you have soaring estrogen levels for a year or two. You could do fertility treatments. You could stop your adjuvant endocrine therapy because your fertility is valuable, right? Like pregnancy is, you know, that's, you're a woman. That's what women do. They get babies, right? But God forbid a breast cancer survivor who maybe doesn't want to have a baby or maybe had a baby, whatever. She completes her treatment. She's all done, not even pausing treatment, completes it. She is having horrible times with her menopause. She cannot have sex with her husband. She has horrible joint pain. She has all of these hot flashes, night sweats, all the stuff we talk about. And God, no, we cannot have a conversation. We cannot talk about a 0.025 patch for you. I mean, give me a break. It's very incongruous to me. Like, you could do shared decision making and talk about, you know, pregnancy, but you cannot talk about, and I really think it's because we do not value women's lives or their experiences once they're kind of like done with
done in the reproductive game.
You know, just kind of, you know, it's a little hot flash, sweetie. It's not just that. And anybody who counsels patients on this are their old men or younger oncologists, many of them are female, who are, I'm sorry, they're not menopausal yet. They have no idea. So anyone who tells me it's not so bad, it means they've never been on these medications.
What comes around, comes around.
They don't know.
No, you know, and, you know, of course, like women can be, you know, women can be misogynist as well. And that is, you know, one of the things that I hear all the time on social media is I went to my doctor and she's a woman and she's even older. And, you know, she really kind of gave me the runaround or just kind of said, oh, sweetie, you know, happened to me too. And this is just for all women going through menopause. And, you know, this is such an interesting discussion because there are, so many ways to individualize this treatment plan. There is data available. There is shared decision-making and there is real do no harm, but you have to really think about, you know, the clinician needs to think about as well as the patient of like, you know, what is the harm here? And I think you're doing an amazing job to change an entire generational mindset on the importance of estrogen after breast cancer. It's going to take a while. It's going to take a lot of people talking, and it's going to start from women who are not clinicians and slowly get into the minds of clinicians. But, you know, one of the things that Avram taught me 2 years ago is that activating the army of women who are listening, who are the survivors, who are the breasties, who are in your groups, of all the things you're saying is eventually going to change healthcare. It's actually probably not going to necessarily, who knows? Who knows what the future holds? But you're doing an amazing job and you are the right person for this job in this specific segment because you can attest to all of the wide range of emotions and friendships that survivors go through.
Yes. Thank you. It's, you know, and I think that, you know, just taking some of the fear out of doctor, like, I think everyone just needs to take a collective deep breath and be like, come on, guys, we went to medical school, we survived breast cancer, the two of us, we can partner together. We've both been through a lot from a doctor and a patient standpoint. And we're smart, we've got brains, we can reason, we can look at data. I you know, and listen, we do pros and cons for everything in life. Patients can sign an informed consent if the physician wishes, right? I have a sample informed consent that I like lay it out on the line and patients can sign it. They can share it with their doctor. If, you know, their doctor's willing to prescribe for them, I'll give them the like consent form. And I tell patients it's okay to try something for a few months. And if it's not, you know, and if it doesn't really help you, fine, but like you're no harm, no foul. If, you know, and I think you've talked about it, like everyone should, you can do a trial of HRT. It's not a long-term commitment,
but no.
If it helps you, if it improves things, then that's okay.
And it helps you. Yeah. You know, I love that you bring that up because it's kind of become a shtick of what I do is almost like talking about this trial period because the biofeedback you can get on risks and benefits or how your quality of life could be compared to what other risks are, you know, it varies a lot and it behooves everyone to sort of know what does even hormone therapy feel like? What am I basing this decision on? Right. And so I think everyone should have a trial period.
Yeah, it's okay. And I also think that, you know, I keep on talking about lately, like this low hanging fruit, like it's a no brainer. Like if anybody's listening, please, vaginal estrogen is safe.
Please, vaginal estrogen.
Everybody. Their guidelines. Heather's going to link to our survey. That we're doing.
Let's talk about your survey.
Yeah. So me and Dr. Leila Agarwal and Dr. Eleonora Teplinski, they both have big social media followings. They're breast oncologists who care about sexual health after breast cancer. And they're,
thank you, ladies.
They're forward thinking and they're open and they're talking about it. They recognize this. So I partnered with them and said, hey guys, let's do a survey. Cause you know, the three of us, we know that patients are not getting the access to the guidelines that all of us, you and all the doctors on social media are like, hey guys, another study, another study, another study, NAMS guidelines, even ASCO's got guidelines on using vaginal hormones and addressing other concerns, obviously, for sexual health. And, you know, I spoke to a leading breast oncologist who presented at ISHWISH. And I said, you know, like, we've got to do something. Cause like, it's, I see lots of patients suffering. She goes, oh no, 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 no. We've got guidelines. The oncologists know this now. And I was like, no. Not happening.
No,
it's not happening on the ground. So the idea of the survey is, how is your experience? Are you getting access? Are you getting information? Who's giving you the information? You know, are you getting referrals to, you know, pelvic floor PTs and like, is anybody talking? So it's about a 10 minute anonymous.
And it's for survivors,
breast cancer survivors about specifically access to sexual health concerns. We're going to do another, we'll do more on bigger menopause things. This is specifically sexual health and access to vaginal estrogen, vaginal hormones. And I knew with this, within a week, we've already gotten over 1,000 responses, but we want
That's
more.
It's going to close amazing.
In January. But the responses are obviously question, you know, little answers that you're going to put in, but there's also a comment section. So if you want to share some particularly poignant experience or some sentiments, and we're hoping to do a little shock and awe to, you know, hopefully maybe publish it and, you know, present it to, you know, one of the medical society meetings to say like, hey, doctors, we know you care about your patients, but I don't know if you actually know what's actually happening.
Yeah.
You can't, this is low hanging fruit, treating at least you at least need to know that you are not causing the demise of a personal sexual intimate relationship that these women have with their partners. Because I can't tell you how many times my marriage is falling apart. Not only do they I don't feel womanly because of my breasts are gone, but now my vagina is dried and shriveled up. It feels like stabbing knives. Sex ends with tears. Mm-hmm. I have no libido now because it just hurts. And my doctor just says, use some coconut oil or try some hyaluronic acid. I'm sorry, it's not going to fix the problem. It may ease things a bit. I'm not saying those are wrong things to try. But this is really, like, we would not do this to men. We don't do this to male cancer patients. The fact that it's happening to female cancer patients is just unethical, and it's barbaric, right?
It's barbaric. I mean, I have said this before on my show and have, like you, were friends with many sexual health urologists, but, you know, I heard the story of the American Urologic annual meeting when a male urologist stood up and said, I am treating my metastatic prostate patients with testosterone therapy for quality of life. And the room stood up and gave him a standing ovation for treating cancer patients and giving them quality of life. But we do not do this for women.
No,
and no one is giving you or me a standing ovation.
No, in fact, Heather and I, you and I have talked about it. I'm actually very careful about how much I speak about this on social media, because there are some negative personality types out there who might choose to put red X's on our faces if we even mention the word estrogen in breast cancer survivor. It's not irresponsible. It's called the practice of informed consent and patient education and shared decision-making. And this is women's bodies, right?
Exactly.
But it's a very bizarre way that you might be stoned if you say it out, you know?
It's because it's emotional, right? It's because for women, it is emotional. For men, it's heroic.
Yeah.
I applaud you so much. And I encourage any of you, if you're a breast cancer survivor listening to this, which I know I bet a lot of you are because the title will grab you, fill out that survey. And what you are doing, Corinne, is you are using that army of women to bridge into the academic centers. And for women thinking about, how can I do something? How can I help this movement? You know, filling out these surveys is gold. It's so crucial. It's so helpful so that we can start to change, I guess, the minds of clinicians who, in a way, are gatekeepers, right? Because you cannot write your own prescription ultimately. I just really want to end this by saying thank you so much. This is a topic that I know after you do this, like, you're going to be revved up for a while, because it's a topic that is I'm overusing the word emotional, but it's just so much. It's so heavy in both a good way, but also looking at all the things that have gotten us to have this conversation, it is sad. But you're making such an important change. You are doing incredible work. People tell me all the time, you're doing God's work. You are too. You're doing God's work here. To say that women should have a say in how their lives go, their quality of life, what they will and will not tolerate, what their risks are, is not for any other human ultimately to decide with the data, the literature that we have on both sides of menopause. I applaud you. I'm so honored to call you my friend, and I can't wait to see you in a few weeks.
Yeah. Thank you so much for giving just this, you know, your podcast, the platform, because you can't have the army of women unless you have a platform to send out that message to the army. So thanks for, you know, elevating this message and being my partner in crime and helping breast cancer survivors get access.
Oh, thank you so much. I can't wait to see you. Big hug through Zoom. Thank you guys to everyone who is listening. Definitely check out the links below for all of the things. You can find Dr. Men on Instagram and any of her other socials. And I'll see you guys next week for a brand new episode. Bye, everyone. Thank you guys, as always, for listening to this show. If you love the show, you're going to love my new book, Unlock Your Menopause Type. This book is really meant to help you identify and target and therefore best treat your most bothersome menopause symptoms. In the book, I go through all the different ways menopause can be treated with HRT, of course, non-hormonal therapies, and diet, exercise, and lifestyle. You can get the book anywhere books are sold. And if you are so inclined, please leave a book review wherever you bought your book. I will absolutely be thanking you. I hope you enjoy reading it as much as I enjoyed writing it. If I haven't already done so, thank you. Thank you from the bottom of my heart for listening to my show. Consider subscribing so you never miss an episode. Also, if you love the show, your stars or a quick review could really help other women who are searching for information on menopause and midlife around the globe find this show. If you want to work with me, consider the Reclaiming Menopause Masterclass. The link for that is in the description to this show. Thank you again from the bottom of my heart for all your support, and I'll see you next week for a brand new episode.